VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. It's often been referred to as the Trial of the Century, which occurred in July of 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee. It's formally known as the State of Tennessee v. John Thomas Scopes, but it's most commonly referred to as the Scopes Monkey Trial. Well, our guest today calls it one of the most distorted and misrepresented events in American history. This matter extends much deeper than the matter of origins, but you will see how racism is actually a key element. Our guest has studied and researched this matter for over half a century. He has written a book to set the record straight. Joining us today, we welcome Dr. Jerry Bergman. He's a multi-award-winning teacher and author. He has taught biology, biochemistry, anatomy, genetics, and other courses for over 40 years at the University of Toledo, a medical college, Bowling Green State University, and other colleges. His 9 degrees include a doctorate from Wayne State University in Detroit. The 1,026 college credit hours he has earned is the equivalent to almost 20 master's degrees. He has over 1,800 publications in both scholarly and popular science journals that have been translated in some 13 languages. His books, which include chapters that he has authored, are in over 2,400 college libraries in 65 countries. He's with us today discussing his book, The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. And Dr. Bergman, welcome here to Crosstalk.
It's great to be here.
I'm going to have you take us back to 1925, to the Scopes trial, and help us understand what led up to this trial. What was going on?
Well, the ACLU basically was aware of a law passed. And the law basically said in public schools, you could not teach theories which contradicted the biblical account of creation. Basically, it said you can't teach human evolution. And the ACLU, of course, didn't like that because the ACLU, a major plank in their worldview, is human evolution. And so they wanted to go to court. To do that, they had to have a case. And they asked literally for volunteers. Mm-hmm. And Scopes decided to volunteer. He was asked to in Dayton, Tennessee. The feeling was it would bring attention to that city. Mm-hmm. They were not doing too well. They had a lot of industry that moved out, and so they thought, well, we'll bring it in, and they did, and that's how it became famous. So basically, the Scopes trial was evolution versus creation, essentially.
So the ACLU, they came into existence around 1920,
right?
Just a few years. So this is one of their early cases, and that they got engaged with then.
This was the case that made the ACLU, basically.
Interesting. What is the most common understanding promoted today as to what this trial was all about? And I ask that because you write that understanding of this trial is a false picture. We have a false picture of the trial, but nevertheless, let's paint. What is that false picture that people have in their minds about this trial?
The false picture is it was science versus religion. In fact, most books, I have about 100 books about the trial, and almost without exception, they stress science versus religion. Science was evolution. Religion was Christianity, basically.
Interesting. Let's also, just kind of in the setting of all this, learn about the major players in the trial. So let's tell us about the major individuals, John Scopes, Clarence Darrow, and also William Jennings Bryan.
Well, the major character that is well known, of course, besides John's, my throat here is getting dry. Mm-hmm. But besides Scopes, of course, was Clarence Darrow. Clarence Darrow was an open, outspoken atheist, and he basically was very opposed to Christianity. Mm-hmm. William Jennings Bryan was the opposite. He was a Christian, Presbyterian, actually, and he was very concerned about the effect of non-Christian teachings in society. Mainly, he was concerned about racism. And that came out very clearly in his early writings.
Mm-hmm. Now, you, as you write about Clarence Darrow, you indicate he was an agnostic.
Yeah, I think because most atheists don't like to call themselves atheists. That's not a nice term. In fact, most prefer agnostic. It's less dogmatic and less, well, gee, I'm just an agnostic. I'm just questioning God. I'm not going out and saying there is no God. And so, therefore, it's nicer to use it. Use the term agnostic.
And you also state that he had a contempt for all fundamentalists whom he called ignorant, intolerant, illiterate, and bigots. And I said, boy, that sounds a lot like 2024.
Yeah, really a lot of hostility. And of course, that's interesting why he had so much hostility. Some people think it was bad experiences he had with a church or with Christians, but who knows? But nonetheless, that's the attitude he had. Strong. Attitude he had.
And more about Brian's background himself?
Well, he was, of course, a lawyer, and he's fought quite a few cases. He was well known for being the three-time presidential candidate, lost all three times, and he was a Democrat. He was very strongly supportive of the Democratic Party. So he's often pictured as someone who's ultra-right or very extreme in his views. But actually, his views in the Democratic Party are very similar to the views that Democrats have had for a long time. Mm-hmm. One difference was, though, he was a very devout Presbyterian. He strongly believed that, indeed, Christianity helped people be better people. And concerned with racism, he realized very clearly that the Bible teaches we're all descendants of Adam and Eve. Therefore, all races are brothers or at least cousins. And that was a core belief that he had. And it's not well known, but around 1902, in his magazine called The Commoner, he published a lot of articles basically pushing for many of the things that came true 50 years later in the civil rights movement. For example, he stressed blacks, the word he used, of course, is Negroes, but Negroes should have equal education rights. They should have equal rights of speech. There should be no difference between whites and blacks relative to the rights. And he very eloquently articulated in his magazine the importance of this idea, the importance of this belief. And the belief, of course, was based on his belief we're all brothers and sisters, literally, period, because we're all descendants of the first couple.
Did they not both have similar concerns about education?
Oh, yeah, they did, of course. But the concerns were, Brian felt education should be with morals, with values, with Christianity. And he didn't stress Christianity so much. He did relative to the beliefs of equality, of loving your neighbor, etc. So he wasn't really a dogmatic dogmist pushing religious ideas. He was very concerned about, well, common people. And that's why he published his journal called The Commoner, because he was concerned about everyday people. He was concerned about what we would call today the disenfranchised, the minorities, those who are not leaders of society, those who things didn't go right for various reasons. So in many ways, he was concerned about the downtrodden, the group of people in his day that really were not treated very well.
We're talking today with Dr. Jerry Bergman. You write that Darwinism, in one form or another, has entered directly or indirectly into virtually every aspect of American thought and consciousness. Give us an example of that.
Well, that's true, because the best way is to look at what we call worldviews. And the two basic worldviews are Christianity. Christianity explains where we came from, why we're here, and where we're going. Where we came from, of course, we were created. Why are we here? We're here to serve our Creator and fellow man. Where we're going, heaven or hell. And so the secular worldview has the same core ideas. Where do we come from? We evolve. Why are we here? To survive. Where are we going? When we die, and that's it. And so those two worldviews are very much in contrast. And Brian himself saw that the idea that we evolved and we're here to survive, etc., he realized that that's contrary to Christianity and contrary to human rights. If you're talking about treating everybody equally, if you're talking about helping those poor, the disenfranchised, you're talking about a result, a behavior, which is based, of course, on Christianity.
You also indicate that this is one of the most distorted events of American history. Tell us why.
Unequivocally. And I accepted pretty much the common belief that indeed it's a trial between religion and science. Science, of course, true. Religion, of course, not necessarily untrue, but not relevant. And so, therefore, as I read more and more about the Scopes trial, it became apparent that it was not about religion versus science purely. Also, as I studied science more and more, and of course I taught science in the college level for about 40-some years, as I taught this more and more, I realized the claims that were made relative to the evidence for evolution, specifically in the Scopes trial, have all now been disproved. So we say science versus religion, and we know now, and this is not debated, we know now that basically the science presented in the Scopes trial, now it wasn't formally presented in the trial itself, because the judge ruled the concern was not whether evolution was true or false, but he did allow the scientists who were going to testify to write a paper, which basically then became part of the trial transcript. And that gave them an advantage, actually, because they could think about it, they could do some research, they could write a scholarly paper. And the main arguments they used, in fact, all the arguments they used today have been clearly refuted by science. It's now no longer accepted that, for example, Piltdown Man is a valid evolutionary ancestor. It's now fully acknowledged that it was a fraud.
Very interesting in this because, as you point out, most people today believe this is about creation and religion and so forth in the classroom. But you indicate this trial is more about racism and eugenics than it was about religion and evolution. And we live in a time when ears readily are perking up when they hear the word racism. So what is the tie to racism?
Well, the tie to racism is several aspects. One of the main ones is, as I mentioned, that Darwin, his ideas became very popular in the United States. And one of his ideas are, of course, we all evolve. We evolve from lower forms of life. Primarily, now they don't say we evolve from monkeys, but us and monkeys had a common ancestor. And so essentially, humans came from monkeys. And one of the main evidences for that was the so-called missing links. Missing links were supposedly individuals who had some monkey traits and some modern human traits. Well, for a century, the individuals that had some monkey traits were the black population, the Negroes, as the word used then, and also, of course, the Aborigines. And so they saw racism in, now they didn't look at it as racism, they just said these people are less evolved than us. And Darwin made that very clear in his writings. Others made that very clear as well. And that was a central part of many textbooks, especially, in fact, one of the worst is the textbook in the Scopes case, the called Civic Biology. And that had a whole chapter on basically eugenics and racism. Now, some textbooks may have a page or two or three, but it was far more detail, in far more detail, and far more well developed, the racist ideas in the Scopes book that was used in the Scopes trial. And that's one thing that bothered William Jennings Bryan a great deal, because it blatantly taught racism and was blatantly openly against the general teachings of Genesis.
Dr. Jerry Bergman is with us today, and friends, we're discussing his book. Keep in mind our setting right now, so put yourself in the year 1925. That's when this trial is underway. This is the thought that was going on during this time, and we're talking about the other side of the Scopes monkey trial. At its heart, at the trial, it was about racism, and we're going to talk further about that after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where is the Garden of Eden today?
Chris, we don't know. The location of the Garden of Eden is forever lost. After Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, God placed an angel to guard the entrance so that no one could go there again. There is no such place on earth that's guarded by a fearsome angel. The Bible does tell us, however, that in the days of Noah, the world was totally restructured by that great flood. All landmarks of the previous world were destroyed. The earth was completely restructured by that flood, so we wouldn't expect to find the Garden of Eden. While the names of the rivers that are given in Genesis do correspond to modern-day river names, they don't actually correspond to any known rivers. Chris, let's go back to Genesis and think carefully about what it teaches there.
For more information, visit our website at icr.org. I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, the other side of the Scopes monkey trial. Our topic today with Dr. Jerry Bergman, who's in studio with us today, and a multi-award-winning teacher and author, and taught courses for over 40 years, and has multiple books that are in some 2,400 college libraries in 65 countries in 13 different languages, having studied this Scopes monkey trial for about half a century now and gathering information through these many years, and now put it together in his book called The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. Matter of fact, Dr. Bergman is in studio today because he's actually speaking this evening for the Creation Science Society of Milwaukee. They're meeting at 6:30 tonight. That's when the meeting gets underway. And I understand that you can attend this evening for those of you within driving distance. They're holding it tonight in the facilities of Fairview Lutheran Church. That's 137 North 66th Street in Milwaukee. And again, that gets underway at 6:30 this evening. Dr. Bergman, you were just talking about the science books and so forth. You actually indicate that there was a large number of science books in the 1920s that all supported eugenics and racism.
Yes, there were. There were quite a few, and openly. But again, probably the worst of all of them mm-hmm. was the book that was involved in the Scopes trial that Scopes supposedly had taught from.
No, I just a little side tangent here. This is also the time that somebody else was coming into prominence. I'm thinking of the name of Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. And we realize that her belief in eugenics was very racist. She was pushing ideas like this at the very time that the Scopes monkey trial was going on.
That's true. She was. And she believed, as evolutionists back then did, that certain races are inferior mm-hmm. and breeding with these, that's the word they used, with these races would cause degeneration of the genome. It would cause basically pollution of the superior race.
My.
And that superior race she was quite open about was the Negroes, the blacks.
And then that's, again, the term used at that time, 1920s. And friends, those of you that are, you know, you talk and tout Planned Parenthood, please know racism, eugenics, is at the very core, at the very heart of Planned Parenthood and its foundings through their leader, Margaret Sanger. Racism was also a very concern of William Jennings Bryan, too, wasn't it?
Very much so. Again, he was concerned about the common people.
Mm-hmm.
He was concerned about those who were disenfranchised. And it's a major question to ask is, why didn't he bring this up more at the Scopes trial? Well, there's a very good reason. The Scopes trial occurred in the Deep South. There, as far as I know, there's one black family living in that area, and that family wasn't too well accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized if he would have actually brought up what he mentioned in 1902, he probably would have been run out of town. So therefore, he realized that he's got to base the trial on the simple belief that we're all brothers and sisters. Now, he didn't specify who was our brother and sister, but we're all humans, our brothers and sisters. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve. And that's what he pushed. So rather than push his ideas relative to equality of the races, wisely he didn't. I mean, he was a lawyer. He's tactful. He knew what to do, how to deal with this. And basically, he ignored his full reasons for. But now we know his full reasons, of course, because we know a lot about his history
mm-hmm.
and about what he believed and about what he wrote. So it's not hidden. But he didn't bring that up in the Scopes trial because let's just focus on the basic teachings of Genesis and the basic teachings of evolution. That's the core. That's all we have to focus on. And that's what he did focus on.
Okay. So the ACLU is greatly engaged in this. They're also advancing secularism during this time. That was part of their core. Tell us, who is Professor Nigel Barber?
He was one of the many individuals who had input in the Scopes trial.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several professors that wrote this paper, basically, that they tried to defend evolution. And this paper, as I mentioned, they gave the evidence, which, again, all of that evidence has now been fully refuted. One brief example is vestigial organs. Back then, they believed that were about 100 organs in our body that had no function, like the appendix, the tonsils, the adenoids, the coccyx, etc. And therefore, this was proof of evolution. Well, now we know all of these organs have very important functions.
Yeah.
So they're not useless at all.
Barber also called this trial, and I'm quoting, a turning point in which science broke free from the shackles of religion. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, yeah, that's what a number of people thought, that religion, Christianity specifically, up at that time had a central influence in America. If you look at the early American fathers, you know that they were motivated in many ways by Christianity, and all men are created equal and so on. And so therefore, the ACLU was trying to break that among others, and Barbara was one that among others that were trying to break that tradition because they wanted the worldview that we base society on, evolution and not Christianity. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jerry Bergman with us today. He has authored The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial and, of course, dealing with the aspect of racism and eugenics part of this. And you indicated in your book here that this trial actually vilified Christianity and vilified Christians. Comment on that.
Oh, it did, because that was the ACLU's main goal was to do that. And how they did that was pretty much not during the trial, but at the end of the trial, they put Brian basically on the stand. As not as an attorney, but basically as one of the witnesses. And he naively said, well, sure, I'll be glad to be questioned. No problem. And what they did, and of course, the Bible, we're talking about lots of words, lots of sentences, what, 66 books, etc. And so out of a book that long, you can easily find a couple of statements that don't seem to go along with science today. And they found those statements, like Jonah and the whale, etc., or Jonah and the big fish, actually. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they brought this up. Now, do you really believe that a man can be swallowed by a fish? So basically what Darrell tried to do is make fun of these beliefs. Hmm. And Brian, my guess is he really hasn't thought about the, I mean, how many people stay up late at night worrying about Jonah and the whale? Mm-hmm. They just accept this is the story in the scriptures. You know, the Bible talks about it as a miracle. There are many miracles in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Why not one more? Mm-hmm. And so Brian had no problem, no concern about this. And when it was brought up by Darrell, of course, he answered it, but Darrell, of course, in such a way made fun of him. Now, Darrell was a lawyer. He's a good lawyer, had very high level of success in many cases. That's why he became so famous. He was good with words, and he was able to, in such a way, question Brian, which it appeared, Brian appeared to be foolish, naive, etc. And he did that very effectively, and therefore, that is a part of the trial which has been publicized throughout the world.
Yeah.
It said that Brian may have won the trial, but in essence, in public opinion, Brian lost. And partially because of the questioning that he was given, that Darrell was given to Brian towards the end of the trial. Now, partially Brian's thought was, good, you can question me, no problem. But then I would like to question you. I would like to evaluate your beliefs and the effect of your beliefs on society. But unfortunately, the judge said, okay, no more. This is improper anyways. Trial's over. Make a decision. We'll move on. And so, therefore, Brian was not able to question Darrell as he was questioned, and that turned out to be a problem.
Yeah. Let's talk about that judge in the trial just a little bit, Judge John Ralston. And I understand he opened each day's proceedings with prayer. What can you tell us about this judge?
Well, that's pretty common back then to mm-hmm. open trials with prayer. And, of course, the judge was a creationist. He agreed with Brian, and he thought, my guess is, though, this is what he did. This is what he did in his courtroom. So why should this trial be any different?
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Darrell objected strenuously to opening the proceedings in this case with a prayer. And
not appreciated by the ACLU.
Not at all, no. They wanted this to be totally secular, although we swore on the Bible for years before we would give testimony in the courts. So some of those ideas were part of the court system and remain part of the court system. And I guess today you still swear on a Bible. I'm not sure. Haven't been to court I've never been to court.
Okay.
Except to testify. So I've never been arrested, so I don't have any personal knowledge. But that was one of the aspects of the court process, which was clearly influenced by Christianity.
Now, also, again, friends, keep in mind our setting right now is 1925. Okay, that's where we are in the Scopes Monkey trial. Media bias was very much at play. You know, we see media bias strongly today, but media bias was much at play at that time as well.
It was absolutely incredible, especially from the, I hate to use the word leftist, but, you know, the journals that were in that orientation, and they were just nasty. I mean, all kinds of name-calling. Clearly presented the whole case as ignorance against science or ignorance against fact, ignorance against truth, etc. And many books on the Scopes trial They weren't quite as strong, but on the other hand, they stressed that throughout the ghost trial. Mine is the only book that stressed this throughout the entire book. Some books may have had a page or two or a chapter. I'm not aware of any that have a chapter, but a page or two about what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And as I read more and more, I realized that let's look at these few pages and let's look at these other aspects besides the, quote, religion versus science.
Yeah.
And as I did more and more, I realized that, number one, they were wrong on all the science presented in the Scopes trial. And number two, they really, the main goal was, well, Darrell said this was his main goal, was to mean Christianity, conservative Christianity primarily, those that accepted the scriptures as the word of God. He didn't care about churches that did fundraising and gave money to the poor. That wasn't his concern. The concern was the core beliefs of Christianity that he wanted to attack. And again, as you noted, quite viciously, and we don't know why. We don't know what the, you know, why people hate is sometimes hard to understand. And I think with Darrell, I should do a lot more reading about him, but for some reason, he really had a strong hatred towards Christianity. Of course, he had a strong hatred toward lots of things, so that's not, it was part of his personality.
Dr. Bergman, what was the Butler Act, and how did that play into this case?
The Butler Act was, he was a person in the legislature, and it came up where some people were learning about evolution in the schools, that we evolved from apes, and he saw that as very demeaning, and so he put a bill made with by help of several other congressmen in the Tennessee legislature, and the bill passed, was signed by the governor, and that became the Butler Law. That became the anti-evolution law, as it's called. And that was the law, of course, that ACLU was concerned about.
Okay. I'd like to get back to this matter that many believe of this trial about a clash between fundamentalist religion and scientific truth. But you're saying the biggest battle was opposition to racism, eugenics, and then you add something else. You add, and the power of wealth. What did wealth have to do with this?
Well, basically, so many of these political trials have to do with wealth. The wealth of people, people who are wealthy want to control society. They want to affect society. And in this case, it's hard to say exactly the connection, except the ACLU used this trial to become very wealthy. Mm. And now they are extremely wealthy. They have lots of money. They get lots of donations. In fact, I get letters about every 6 months from the ACLU wanting me to send $50 or $25 to fight whatever evils they see in society.
Mm-hmm. You also make us aware in your book about how things were playing out in Germany at this time, back in the 1920s, that evolutionary theory was really at the very base of Germany's military policies.
Oh, no question. There's so much material documenting that very carefully. We know Darwin's ideas went to Germany by Ernst Haeckel. Ernst Haeckel then spread those ideas throughout Germany, and his books, and Haeckel, by the way, wrote a lot of books, very well documented, many of them translated into English, and so you can buy them today. And those ideas spread throughout Germany. And of course, Hitler was aware of those ideas. A lot of people don't know this, but Hitler was a voracious reader. He read a lot. And he certainly read a lot about Haeckel and Haeckel's ideas about evolution.
Dr. Jerry Bergman with us today, the other side of the Scopes Monkey Trail. I've got a few more questions, and later, friends, we'll give you opportunity to call in and ask your questions of our guest as well. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Just as the moon obscures the sun's light during an eclipse, today's radical secularism has obscured the light of God. But God's light still shines. This month, the VCY Bookstore and Outreach Center has Erwin Lutzer's brand new book called The Eclipse of God at 51% off. In The Eclipse of God, Dr. Lutzer exposes our nation's disastrous efforts to redefine God in its own image. The resulting damage has been so great that confusion about God has even crept into the church. This bold exposition will help you understand society's attempts to make God inclusive and sin-friendly in contrast with the biblical truth about his unchanging character. Get Lutzer's new book, The Eclipse of God, at 51% off only during September and only at the VCY Bookstore and Outreach Center. Order online at vcy.com or call 888-722-4829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Jerry Bergman is with us today and taking us back to 1925, the Scopes trial, the Scopes monkey trial, what was really known as the State of Tennessee versus John Thomas Scopes. And there's a lot of misinformation about this trial. And as our guest researched this topic, found racism is really at its core, eugenics really at the core of the Scopes monkey trial. And talking about the trial itself, and we're talking with Dr. Jerry Bergman. Again, friends, he is in the Milwaukee area as he's speaking tonight for the Creation Science Society of Milwaukee, 6:30 p.m., 137 North 66th Street in Milwaukee. Dr. Bergman, the whole aspect of the evidence that came in through this trial, they brought up something. You talked about the science that they were using. It was false. It's been proven wrong. But let's talk about Nebraska Man. They brought up Nebraska Man in all of this. So help us understand certainly the lack of truth regarding Nebraska Man.
Yeah, that's one of the more interesting events. They called it Hesperopithecus, and it was based on a tooth they discovered in Nebraska. And that was interesting because at this time, there was a lot of controversy against Brian. And this was discovered in his home state. And so several people, one person in particular, wrote a whole book basically making fun of Brian because Brian believed in creation. And of course, we've got evidence of evolution. We've got this tooth. Well, later on, of course, when the trial was going on, there was questioning about whether this was valid. But it still, in essence, was at that time seen as valid. Although a few years later, it was proven to be not valid. Example. Because the tooth turned out to be not a tooth from a human, but from a peccary, which is a kind of pig. Now, people laugh at that, and of course, for good reason. The ironic thing is that pigs have a lot of traits, like their skin, their valves, etc., and their teeth, that are very human-like, which, of course, is contrary to what you expect with evolution. And that's why they misjudged his teeth, because they indeed saw it as a human tooth, because it's similar. But how they found out it wasn't a human teeth is they found a lot more. And when they found a lot more of the teeth in that area that they were looking, they realized that this is not a human teeth, a tooth. It was from a peccary, a pig. And therefore, it probably 1927, so a couple years after the Scopes trial, it was definitively shown as not a human and a pig. And so, but during the Scopes trial itself, this was brought up as good evidence for evolution.
So what was the ultimate court ruling as it relates to the Scopes trial?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. The question is, did he teach evolution or didn't he? And the court ruled basically he did, and therefore he violated the law, and therefore he was found guilty. And the interesting thing was the fine was like $100, and the fine, it was later on ruled that it was set by the wrong person. I think the judge said it or the jury said it, and it was not the way it should have been. And so therefore the appellate court threw the case out because of this technicality, which ironically is what happens to a lot of cases. I think by and large, they realized that this was a show trial. It drew a huge amount of attention. Mm-hmm. It changed the world relative to broadcasting. They had broadcast, to three different countries, I think. And they did films taken of it, and they were sent by courier to New York and other places. And so it received probably more publicity than almost any trial at that time period. And so, therefore, it was very, very popular. And a lot of people felt that the appellate court as well felt that, look, this is just not going anywhere. Let's mm-hmm. just throw it out because of this technicality. But the ACLU, of course, wanted to lose. They wanted to lose because then that would give them a chance to appeal it. And they're hoping to get a higher level decision that would basically be effective throughout the entire United States. They didn't get that, but that was their goal. They wanted basically to outlaw teaching of the Bible and any teaching against evolution they wanted to outlaw because teaching against evolution is backdoor teaching of creation. So therefore, they wanted to make sure that in all the schools, only evolution was taught and it was taught as fact and creation was not going to be mentioned. And that, ironically, of course, what we see today, and that, ironically, is the state of affairs that has existed since, the Scopes trial. And so, therefore, the trial, in many ways, is critically important for us because it ruled against one worldview, the Christian worldview, and ruled for another worldview, the evolutionary or the secular worldview. And so that's why now the secular worldview is the only worldview that can be taught in schools. So in essence, our schools teach religion. They teach a religion which basically says, as I mentioned, we evolved. Why are we here? To survive. What happens when we die? Well, that's the end.
Secular and humanism.
That's how secular humanism became prominent in our teaching. So they teach religion contrary to what they claim, but they teach their religion. And of course, our worldview is outlawed, unfortunately, due to several court trials, which followed in the pattern of the Scopes trial. So that's why the trial is so important.
And did this ever make it to the Supreme Court?
About 20 years ago, I believe it did make it to the Supreme Court. But it's interesting, they ruled it in such a way to where the theory of creation could be taught in such a way that's proper. So it's
called it the theory of creation. Interesting.
They didn't really make a ruling that you could not teach this worldview. But the lower courts have consistently ruled basically against any idea that we could teach alternative, so to speak, theories.
Yeah. Okay. You also indicate in your book that no one has done more to vilify the South, the Scopes trial, William Jennings Bryan, and the creationists involved in the Scopes trial than H.L. Mencken. Who is he? What? Yeah. Tell us about him.
Mencken was an interesting guy. He was a good writer. He had exceptional language skills, but he also had some very strong feelings about a lot of people. Southerners, blacks, Jews. And that's ironic because, of course, his editor, his publisher, was a Jew. But he said nasty things about a lot of groups.
Americans as well.
Americans as well. So he was a proud German and somewhat arrogant, but he was a popular writer because he could really satirize a lot of people. And of course, he made interesting reading. And he was the editor of the Mercury magazine, and he also wrote quite a few books. And so therefore, you've got to admit, he was a good writer, but very stinging when he would write against those he disliked.
Yeah, and very wrong views. I mean, he wanted to sterilize what he thought were inferior races, reduce the population. Again, you know, I can just hear Margaret Sanger applauding for this guy.
Yeah, and she no doubt was influenced by him.
Wow. Friends, we're going to open our phone lines if you'd like to get online here with some questions regarding the Scopes trial, something perhaps piqued your interest. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Racism, very much eugenics at the very heart of this. Our number, 800-733-9829. Dr. Bergman, as you're aware, there's a play entitled Inherit the Wind that retold the Scopes monkey trial. That, again, greatly, you're saying that this play is distorted the truth.
Oh, enormously distorted. And it openly made fun of Christians, of creationists. It is so distorted, it's hard to believe anybody could find that as realistic. But it claimed to be, or at least it inferred that it was based on the Scopes trial. They wanted it to, not to make that, because they know they were grossly distorting the trial. And so they renamed the characters. Bryan was not Bryan, and Darrow was not Darrow, and so they used other names. But basically, it's clearly based on the Scopes trial.
And your book, entitled The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial, at its heart, the trial was about racism. Where is your book available?
Oh, any bookstore. Interesting, I've written about 60 books, and most of them are just ignored. But this book is the only book I had someone go through, must have gone through word for word. And they found in the book, in one of the chapters, there was not a sentence, but part of a sentence that is identical to another sentence in another book. And so they wrote to the publisher and said, this book should be withdrawn, basically, because I plagiarized.
Oh, my.
And I thought it was ludicrous when there were parts of the sentences, not a whole sentence, but there were part of the sentences that were similar to another book. That's true. On the other hand, you can take almost any sentence from almost any book and plug it in Google Books, and you'll find there are other books out there that have pretty much the same wording for that idea.
Right.
And so I do that often, by the way, to find ideas that I'm looking for. For example, on the Scopes trial, I may say something like the Scopes trial was at its core very racist. And so I'll do research on that, and I'll find that sentence in some book, but I find information in that book which is helpful to me in detailing my position on the Scopes trial.
Well, anybody who's read your books know you well document your books.
Yeah.
And you've got extensive footnotes and so forth throughout your books here so that as you're quoting, but yeah, if you use the same phraseology, put five words together that somebody else put five words together, very interesting indeed. But again, it's called The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. Let's go to April in Wilmington, Delaware. April, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, I mean, I can't believe how people don't understand how racist the whole eugenics movement is. If you look at any inner city, you see a Planned Parenthood on every corner, which was all started by Margaret Sanger. But I was just wondering, in your research, if you found any connection to the Freemasons, who I feel have the same goal that you stated, to kind of eradicate Christianity, sow seeds of division in through all this.
Yeah, actually, I've done a lot of writing on Margaret Sanger. In fact, the Planned Parenthood clinics that used her name have now removed her name because they're embarrassed relative to it. But no, I haven't found any connection between Margaret Sanger or her movement and the Freemasons.
Or eugenics movement with Freemasons?
I haven't found any connection. Maybe that's an area I need to look into. Okay. So that may give me a new topic to work on, but I'm not.
Great.
I'll have to look that up when I get home.
Thank you, April.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Our number here, 800-733-9829. Have some open lines. We have Scott from Clarksburg, West Virginia. Scott, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question. In the Old Testament, there are many accounts of cousin marriages, and the law condemned incest, but did not explicitly condemn cousin marriages. Was it around the time of this trial that they began to stigmatize cousin marriages, or what, did it have anything related to that?
No, I'm not aware of anything related to cousin or close marriages related to the trial. Darwin, by the way, was concerned about that because he married his cousin, first cousin, and he had a number of children that had some pretty severe health problems. He had, I think, 12 children, and 10 of them survived. And so, therefore, he himself was worried that maybe marrying his first cousin would be a problem in having his children. So he was concerned about that. But no, the Scopes trial, I'm not aware of anything that was connected to marrying first or second cousins.
That really wasn't part of the case itself.
No, it wasn't. And I just, my guess is it wasn't, had nothing to do with the case.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. Our number, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Dr. Jerry Bergman is with us today. He has taught biology, biochemistry, anatomy, genetics, and other courses for over 40 years on the university level. He has authored this book called The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. And finding at the very heart of this trial, folks, it's not just religion versus evolution. It's about racism. It's about eugenics. And that's what really rose to the surface in the studies. We'll be back in 1 minute here on Crosstalk. Again, our number, 800-733-9829.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewtube.com. I've been teaching through the Book of Revelation on Sunday nights. You can watch it at worldviewtube.com. We're now in Revelation chapter 6. We now have the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The Lord God himself is opening the seals. And the first one is a white horse. It's the Antichrist, and he's bringing false peace. Oh, wow. Isn't that what the world's looking for now? An end to all the wars and rumors of wars and all this happening, but he'll do it with a false peace. And then the second seal is a red horse, and he brings war. The Antichrist has to go to war to take out certain leaders to bring the New World Order. Isn't that interesting? And then the third seal, a black horse, famine, just as globalist leaders are trying to starve us now by destroying farming and dairy. And then the fourth seal, a pale horse of death and hell and pandemics, as we have bioweapon labs all over the world. Man, sinful man, is setting up for the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and friends, helping you understand another side of the Scopes monkey trial that is not out there. And Dr. Bergman has researched this for half a century and put his findings together in this book called The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. Just again, one more time, he is speaking tonight, for those of you in southeast Wisconsin, speaking in Milwaukee, and the facilities of Fairview Lutheran Church, 137 North 66. It's a facility that's being used. It's a meeting of the Creation Science Society of Milwaukee, and it gets underway at 6:30 this evening. And you can hear his presentation this evening. He'll be going further on this topic here tonight as well. Let's go right back to the phone lines. We have Rich calling from Burlington, Wisconsin. And Rich, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. First of all, thank you very much. Your guest is has published material over the decades that I've used. I'm a retired high school science teacher, public school, and I used his materials often in the classroom. And I just wanted to say thank you. But I got a question, because a lot of people that I've talked to about creation and evolution get their information about the whole issue from Inherit the Wind. Do you have any idea how many times that has been performed in our country, in public high schools, to indoctrinate kids, because that's really what it does?
Wow.
Any idea how often that was used?
That's an excellent question, and I do mention in my book how many times it was, but thousands of times. It was.
Yes, I've seen that. But thank you again. I appreciate your work.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you for the call. And he used the term indoctrination. Is that what Inherit the Wind does?
Oh, yeah. It's clearly, that's the clear the purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got Jose calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Jose, you're on the air.
Thank you, and thank you, gentlemen. You have a great show. I was impressed very much by my biology teacher, and I can understand how and why, and but now I am completely Christian and God believing in all this good stuff. But the only thing that he said when we were dissecting creatures in the biology room, and it came to the human creation and the human genes and all that, and then he said, that's all he said. He said, well, throughout the development of the embryo, you'll see that the embryo, it simulates a tail, and it looks like a snake. It looks like it looks like something else, mm-hmm. like a reptile, and then it looks like this,
yeah.
and this and that. And this is all he said about the biology yeah. subject, and also about the treatment of evolution.
Yeah.
And that's all he said, but I learned a lot of stuff from that yeah. and my thinking afterwards.
Jose,
can you comment on that?
Yeah, we're going to have him comment on that. We've seen this chart and the kind of development yeah. there. Your response?
That's commonly mentioned, and all I can say is to come up with those conclusions, somebody had a really good imagination.
Hmm.
They don't have a tail, they have an ostcoccyx, and the fact is when the embryo develops, for good reason, the spinal cord develops first. When you invade a country, you've got to have the intelligence. And of course, in order for the body to function, you have to have the intelligence. The intelligence is a result of the brain and the spinal cord, and therefore that develops first, and that's why it looks like they have a tail. But it's not a tail at all. The ostcoccyx is just the end of the vertebral column, and of course it has to end somewhere. And that bone is actually quite important as a attachment for muscles for different parts of different functions of the body.
Thank you, Jose. April is calling from Delaware, Wilmington. Go ahead, April.
Hi, I was just wondering if you saw or in your research uncovered, I heard that Bill Gates's father worked with Margaret Sanger, and I feel we might be able to, we might be seeing Bill Gates is, I don't know, affection for the eugenics movement.
Okay. And well, certainly, and we're focusing not so much on Margaret Sanger as we are on the Scopes monkey trial, but the thoughts of Bill Gates, he is very much about population control, which is very much part of this Scopes monkey trial too.
And he's very much an evolutionist, as, of course, many people are, because that's all they get in the schools. They're not going to look at both sides until they're exposed to both sides in the schools, ideally, or by their own reading. In my case, all I got was evolution in the schools, but I read a lot. And so whenever I would learn something in the schools, I would wonder, is it true? Can I learn more about it?
Hmm.
And so my additional reading helped me to look at the other side, showing that indeed a lot of the ideas evolutionists perpetuated are not true or distortions.
Thank you for the call. One last call coming in. Anthony in New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. So my question is, with the disagreements in thoughts, do you believe this is more of an intellectual issue or a spiritual issue?
Hmm. Thank you.
In many ways, it's a spiritual issue, but you have to have the information. And decisions are made in the schools, for example, without giving you all the information. If you present the information on both sides, although I don't think we ought to teach both sides of evolution, I think we should show evolution is not true, why it's not true, the harm it's done, and the evidence is clearly in favor of not evolution, but a creation worldview. And just present the evidence. That's all you need to do. And that's easy to do, and that's science.
Thank you for the call here, Anthony. And we're out of time for additional phone calls. And kind of tagging on to that last call, you write in your book that creation matters. And Dr. Bergman, there is a lessening number of Christians that believe that today, that creation really matters. Tell us why it does matter.
Well, I did a book on that, and it's called Darwinism is the Doorway to Evolution. And I show, indeed, that the Darwinian worldview is going to open up the door to evolution. And I got that, by the way, when I was an atheist. I worked for Madeline Murray O'Hare. And I asked her one day, why we have so much in our atheist magazines about evolution? Why not just talk about atheism? And she said, the reason we have so much in our magazines about evolution is because we know evolution is the doorway to atheism. And that's why we stress it in our atheist magazines. And I never forgot that. And of course, later on, when I wrote my book, I used her title, her phraseology.
Wow. So you actually knew her?
Oh, yeah. She liked all my writing. Everything I wrote, she published.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, Dr. Bergman, thank you so much for being with us here today. And thank you for your many, many years of research into this and many other works as well.
And it's great to be here again.
Great. Dr. Jerry Bergman, our guest here today on Crosstalk. His book is called The Other Side of the Scopes Monkey Trial. At its heart, the trial was about racism. And just a reminder, speaking tonight here in southeast Wisconsin, the address 137 North 66th Street in Milwaukee. No registration is required, but it does get underway at 6:30 this evening. Well, friends, we can praise the Lord. We are fearfully and wonderfully made, Scripture says. Marvelous are thy works, and that thy soul knoweth right well. Praise God for what a wonderful Creator we have. God bless you, friends. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.